Let's begin.
This is the boss.
I'm the boss.
And the gloss. On SB Nation Radio.
And SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Here are your hosts, David Gao and Carla Dawson. I got that
sunshine. Welcome back. And we are broadcasting live from Houston, Texas. Where some want to call us home of the Houston Asterisks, right?
Okay, do not.
Some want to do that. But we're also the home of the XFL Houston Roughnecks.
The 3-0 league leading.
And perhaps the best player in the league, P.J. Walker, is putting on a show. He is the quarterback of the Roughnecks, and he has been outstanding in the first three games.
I call him my DW4 2.0.
Excuse me?
Deshaun Watson.
Explain. He's a Deshaun Watson 2.0. He's a different version of Deshaun Watson.
Exactly.
Playing for a Houston football team.
Exactly.
But he's been impressive. He moves around very, very well. He can throw the ball from all arm angles. And if the XFL wanted the – there's a lot of – language that the XFL needs some stars. They need some big name guys. And this may be the guy on whom they build the whole league, right? He's the foundation talent right now.
He's leading the league with 10 touchdown passes. He has been so exciting. His 10 touchdown passes are more than totals of six XFL teams combined.
He's on fire.
I love
his backstory is sort of interesting because he had a couple years in Indianapolis.
Well, he came from Temple, undrafted.
Yep.
He was on the practice squad, kind of in and out of the practice squad with the Colts. And Andrew Luck kind of made a call to his dad, Oliver, commissioner of the XFL, and said, don't miss this guy. He's special. I think Andrew Luck's good at evaluating some talent.
Well, maybe Andrew Luck could be a scout now that he's retired from the NFL.
Oh, but he might not be done.
The Colts would kill to have him back.
Oh, I know it. Jim Irsay was a little cryptic when asked about him. So
recently, I missed that.
Well, didn't say for sure. I mean, he just said he made the right decision as a father and a husband and what he's doing, but did not shut it down that he may never come back.
Intriguing. All right. When we come back, we're going to get a chance to talk to former NCAA basketball coach Pat Kennedy, and we will talk to him about all the doings in college basketball. Pat Kennedy, when we return on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and joining us now is former NCAA basketball coach Pat Kennedy. Pat, thank you for joining the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hey, David and Carla. Great to be with you guys.
Well, great to have you, and what a college season it has been thus far. We're on the cusp of March Madness, at least, and so much is about to unfold. Want to pick your brain on so many fronts. You ready to, can we fire some shots at you here?
Go right ahead, my man.
North Carolina, Roy Williams, what is going on there?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. You know, I've done this radio show for many, many years. Coached against Roy Williams when I was at Florida State, when I was at DePaul. And it wasn't until the most recent years that I would say to people, in a highly respectful way, because I think Roy's a great coach, that his teams just didn't look like the Roy Williams teams that we saw in the past. Not the denial defense, not the offense they used to run in terms of getting the ball inside and creating plays off the dribble, et cetera. And so we see it again this year. Now, of course, it always comes back to, you know, how good are you? What is your talent level? And I'm not saying their talent level is down. Losing Colton Anthony obviously hurt them. But right now, I think this has been a trend, and I hate to say this because, again, I love Roy Williams. This has been a recent trend of North Carolina basketball. And, you know, if they lose to Duke a second time this year and lose 20 games, I mean, very, very tough year for the North Carolina faithful. So I'm not saying they're going to replace Roy Williams, but this is one of the most difficult years they've had in recent memory.
Yeah, they're last place in the ACC at 3-13 and currently on a 7-game losing streak. Wow. I don't know how you recover from that. That's really tough.
Yeah, and I don't think that anybody that knows Carolina, again, I coached against Dean Smith many games in the Dean Dome. We were fortunate to win a few of them. I coached against Roy. The Dean Smith, legacy of what Carolina basketball meant, the great players from Michael Jordan to, you name it. But now all of a sudden, they're not listed per se. When you see the top recruiting classes, the teams you see now is you see Kentucky, you see Kansas, which has always been the case, but you see Duke. But you don't see Carolina. When I was in Florida State, we used to take our team to McDonald's, but Carolina had 5 McDonald's All-Americans. We were not in the same category. Now it just seems that they've kind of lost their luster.
We're talking to Coach Pat Kennedy. Let me ask you about Kansas. So Bill Self seems to be doing a great job amidst all the uncertainty there with the NCAA investigation, and then there was the brawl earlier in the year.
And they're the new AP number one this week.
And they're now the new AP number one. What about the job Bill Self is doing?
Well, we've all lived through these as coaches over the years. Sometimes there are things that happen with your team that can really generate just a real chip on your shoulder. Bill has always done a great job coaching in Kansas. I respect the fact that he stayed there. I really admire, Jim Calhoun's of the world, the state of Connecticut, and obviously Bill Self staying there at Kansas. Kansas the other day looked so good to me when they beat Baylor. And Devin Dotson, when he controls the game from the dribbling point guard position, can change the game. He played great the other day, and Baylor, as great a defensive team as Baylor is, Baylor could not stop Dotson from getting into lane. Think about the second half of that game. Dotson just broke down the Baylor defense, which is a great defense, so many times that it made a huge difference, obviously, in how the game came out. And then when you look at the whole offensive end, and you look at what Kansas is capable of doing, and you take a look at, obviously, the great game that was played by Asabuki.
Oh, my goodness. That was incredible.
Yeah. So you got Dotson. Dotson's breaking down the defense off his dribble. Asabuko, now, he's not a jump shooter from the perimeter. You get Kid Smith from Maryland can shoot it from the outside. But Asabuko is the single most powerful low post player. He almost reminds me of Elijah Wan when he was at Houston. This kid is a force, and he showed it against a very athletic Baylor team this weekend.
What do you see happening, Pat, in the Big 12 championship between, it's probably going to end up being Baylor and Kansas. Who do you think ends up on the top?
Well, I'll tell you what, I like Kansas from the standpoint that I think they've got a chip on their shoulder. Rock Chalk Jayhawk, we've all heard that for many, many years. They went through a very difficult time with the Sensei investigation. The fight, which should have never taken place.
Oh, my goodness.
I thought Bill Self handled it very well. The conference did what they thought they had to do. And I really appreciate what Coach Drew has done with this Baylor team. But Kansas is the blue blood there. I think ultimately if the two of them get to the championship game, you have to give the edge to Kansas.
Okay, that's going to be exciting. Let me ask you about a team out west. So Mark Few and the Zags, he has been coaching there since 1999. He's got almost an 83% winning percentage. What is it going to take for Mark Few to get over the hump with Gonzaga?
Well,
if you had the answer, you're going to have a job there, probably.
Oh, yeah. Goodness. Well, I hope Mark Few is listening because I'm going to give him the magical nuggets, right?
Yes.
I mean, the guy has done one of the most incredible coaching jobs in the country. I know personally that Mark turned down the Kentucky job. He's turned down a UCLA job. Mark Few is one of the most sought-after college coaches in the country. But what I will give him great credit for, and you guys are a little bit younger than I am, you may not remember, but Louis Garnaseca never left St. John's. You know, John Thompson never left Georgetown. Yeah, Jim Boeheim never left Syracuse. Some coaches have bounced around a little bit. Izzo, Michigan State. I think the fact that Mark Few has stayed at Gonzaga is so smart. He's making mega bucks. He is the king of the West Coast right now. Will he finally win it? I think so. Early on, this team looked like a team that could win it. I've seen it most recently. I'm not that excited about that right now. And that sometimes becomes a time where they certainly turn the corner. Doing this radio show for years, I've often said that I had a feel myself, having coached for 32 years consecutively, that when a guy is close to getting it, like a Bill Self, like Boeheim, like Calhoun, Mark's going to win one. It's just a question of when. It ain't like this guy's never going to win one. I like this team early on. I'm not convinced you're good enough to win it right now.
We're talking to former NCAA basketball coach Pat Kennedy. So I'd love to ask you, who do you think has been the most underrated team this year?
Well, I love Villanova. I think Villanova is playing great right now. Typical Jay Wright team. The kid Bay is an underrated player, possibly an All-American level candidate. The Big East are now showing themselves. They may have seven teams in the NCAA tournament. And now, again, hey, Jay Wright, coach of the decade, two national championships. But they've kind of filtered back down into the level of the top 10 teams. I think they're ranked maybe 12th. I've watched them most recently. I love this Villanova team. They're playing great defense. They're starting to shoot the ball really well. They never turn the ball over. And obviously, they're extremely well coached. So watch out for the Cats.
All right, I like it. Pat, last question for you here before we have to run. San Diego State, this weekend, their unbeaten record of 26-game winning streak, quadrant three loss at home to the Running Rebels of UNLV. What does that do to their tournament seeding? And can they recover?
Well, that's obviously a great question. I appreciate it. I've said this about Gonzaga over the years because I've coached at different levels, but when I coached in the ACC, you know, one night you're playing Duke, the next night you're playing Maryland, the next night you're playing North Carolina, the next night you're playing Georgia Tech. And that was back with the Kremens and Dean Smith and all the rest. You really test yourself every night. I always thought that Gonzaga just didn't play a tough enough schedule. I think that same formula shows true for San Diego State. Mm-hmm. I love the job they've done. They're not the best of conferences. I think it's good they lost the game, because the odds of them running the table, not good. But are they strong enough to win a national championship? The answer is no, in my opinion. I love Steve Fisher. I hope they don't get upset with me, but I'm just saying. I see Gonzaga being able to win it. I don't see Dayton or San Diego State, which are interesting teams right now, good enough to win a national title. They may get a good seed, but I don't think they can win it all.
Let me ask you one more question before we let you go. Looking at all the players who will come into the draft next year, what college player has impressed you most? Whom would you take first in the NBA?
Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards, a 6'7", 6'8", forward, freshman at the University of Georgia. I think he's the most talented young man that I've seen this year. I think he will be the number one draft choice if he comes out. There's also a number of guys that kind of, you know, catch you a little bit, but I think he is obviously number one.
All right, that's the coach, Pat Kennedy. Pat, thanks so much for joining us here on SB Nation Radio.
All right, guys, great being with you.
Thank you, Pat. Take care.
This is the Boss and the Gloss. on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Some teams might back up. You know, some teams might turn their back. Who knows?
So what did you guys use?
Right, right. Yeah. So you got to worry about it. And sometimes you got to worry about just how it's being relayed. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I was part of a system where it came from upstairs to someone in the dugout to the hit, to the guy on second base. And we eventually caught it.
That's Joe Girardi of the Yankees.
Of the 2017 Yankees? Yes, I believe so.
So what is your conclusion when he's talking about how they were working on getting signs?
My conclusion is this. I would ask you, boss, would you put money and a good amount of money, because the way that the social media wave and how the narrative is being spun, would you put your house mortgage on the fact that the Astros are the only franchise, they are it, that had a sign-stealing scheme in place?
No, so I do believe there were other teams stealing signs. And this is what is interesting. I think if you polled the fans and said, do you think the Astros were unique? They would say, no, there must be other teams who are doing this. And yet the fans are really enjoying pointing a singular finger at the Astros when deep down they really do believe there were other teams involved. That's the contradiction that's out there.
It is. It's really tricky. And I think playing that soundbite from Joe Girardi is really important, because he was the manager of the New York Yankees when Houston beat them in the ALCS to go on and win the World Series by beating the Dodgers. Joe Girardi is now the manager of Philadelphia Phillies. But the most interesting thing to note to me is the loudest players, and we're hearing from all kinds of players, from Rick Porcello to DJ LeMahieu from the Yankees to, you know, the Atlanta Braves quiet outfielder who says everybody needs a beating. I mean, every on the Astros team. But the loudest and the most brutal, besides Cody Bellinger, he's one, are the Yankees in Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, and Gleyber Torres. And I find it fascinating for a couple of reasons. Number one, Giancarlo Stanton, play more than 10 games a year and then you can talk. Don't tell me you're going to hit 80 home runs. I haven't seen you on the field, and you weren't part of that 2017 team. So there's that. Aaron Judge, you're bitter because you lost the MVP to Jose Altuve, who, if you listen, he was not part of the sign-stealing scandal. He didn't take place of that. But you can believe what you want. This is the narrative that's being created out there. What is fascinating to me is you just heard Joe Girardi. They had the exact same type of system in place, minus trash cans. And he said it. I mean, he said it. Was just, I mean, there's the soundbite. Brian Cashman, manager of the Yankees, has given former Astros pitcher Gerrit Cole the biggest pitching contract ever, 9 years, $324 million. He was part of the 2018 Astros. And the 2019, not the 2017, but they were said to have been doing this sign stealing in 2018. But Gerrit Cole can't exactly remember, but he can say that nothing was done in 19. At the same time, the only player from the 2017 Astros team that was named in Manfred's report was Carlos Beltran. Carlos Beltran came from the Yankees to the Astros. Allegedly, as reported, brought the sign-stealing scandal, taught it to Alex Cora.
He was supposed to be the ringleader.
He was supposedly the ringleader and the only individual that's mentioned. That's it. He got hired as the New York Mets manager. When the scandal broke, he got fired because his name was the only one in this report. But he is not in the unemployment line. Brian Cashman, GM of the Yankees, has hired him as the Yankees' special advisor. Can you help me with this? Can you help explain why the Yankees are so loud at taking down the Astros when I've just laid out what has happened here?
Well, so the next team up, of course, is the Red Sox. And presumably next week we'll get a report from MLB on MLB's investigation on the Red Sox of 2018 and whether Alex Cora took the techniques that he learned with the Astros to Boston and helped them win the World Series that way. But there doesn't seem to be a big desire on the part of MLB to then go to teams 3, 4, 5, and 6. I have this feeling that MLB really wants to stop right after the Red Sox report, that that would be the line they draw. Whether other teams are involved or not, I think there's a feeling that it's just best not to open it up any further.
Well, I think MLB says, we've got our bad boys. It's the Houston Astros, so we're going to hang it on them.
Yep.
And, you know, unfortunately, and hey, I am not okay with sign stealing. I don't think it's great, but Major League Baseball has given this, okay, there is ethical sign stealing. If you see signs from second base, that's ethical. Even if you saw those signs from a camera, it's okay. But you cannot transmit. I mean, it's some kind of crazy business. That's their own problem that they have this. They do not have a fine line. It's very gray. And if you really peel back what the Astros have done with being so egregious, because they were warned and they continued to do it because everyone else was doing it. But nonetheless, they continued to do it. What they did was they got the Yankees and the Dodgers off the hook for not being able to produce in 2017. If you look back at those series, and you can hear an interview with Joe Girardi, he says, we lost the ALCS because we couldn't hit. That's what ended up happening towards the end of that series. Cody Bellinger from the LA Dodgers is extremely vocal about the Astros sign stealing. This last week, he's really come out, really sticking it to the Astros. Cody Bellinger is trying to make up for his own mishaps in the 2017 World Series. He did win NL Rookie of the Year in 17, but he also set a Major League Baseball record for the most strikeouts in a postseason. He had 29 in the postseason, 17 in the World Series against the Astros. That has nothing to do with how many trash cans were banging. The guy flat out couldn't hit. So they are so angry, and they finally have an excuse for their own ineptitude, that's what I think is going on. They're just piling on.
Astros pitching was outstanding that year, 2017. Verlander was at the top of his powers.
There was no Cole.
He was amazing. Yes, pre-Cole.
Charlie Morton was there.
Charlie Morton was outstanding. I guess right now when I think about the Astros and the vitriol that they have faced, I just wonder what kind of magic Dusty Baker can do to get that ship going in the right direction. Think of the pressure on the Astros players now to win. You'll be going into ballparks where everyone will be booing you. The signs will be all over the stadium. The negativity will be really big, right?
Altuve was hit by a pitch today in the spring game.
The world is turned on them.
Not intentional.
And the only way they can sort of validate their 2017 championship now is to win it in legitimate fashion.
Or at least get very far in the playoffs.
At least show how good they are without any help. And so the pressure to perform now is at an almost unprecedented level. I wonder how they'll be able to hold up with that double problem of fans turning against them and the pressure to win now to validate who they are.
Oh, I think it's going to be tough. And Dusty Baker's got his work cut out for him. He knows it. But, you know, Dusty Baker has dealt with a lot of stuff. You know, he was with the Giants when there was Barry Bonds. He was in baseball when there were all the racial tensions, and he was in spring training in West Palm Beach, and he was called things he didn't want to be called, and he was stopped by the police. So to him, this is like, okay, this is an issue, but I have really had some issues.
He's got perspective.
He's got perspective, which is what being 70 and having, you know, 30 years in Major League Baseball does to you. Here's what I would say. And I love what DJ LeMahieu, I thought he said something really great. He says, I just think with the number of cameras around, what do you think is going to happen?
Right.
Like, how about that? But I will remind you, this is not Ray Rice. This is not Aaron Hernandez. And it's not even Pete Rose who cheated to lose. So let's just have some perspective. See what the Astros can do. It's going to be a lot of hate. Hate is going to hate.
Tough season looming for the Houston Astros. We'll be right back on ESPN Nation Radio.
Ducks they quack, and fish go blub, and the seal goes ow, ow, ow. But there's one sound that no one knows.
for fuck's sake.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and this is the segment we enjoy. It is listening to what people have said around the world of sports, and we offer our own commentary and analysis. It is now called What Does the Boss Say After Me? So I will lead off on this one, but it was early this afternoon in the Staples Center. There was a beautiful ceremony for the lives of Kobe and Gianna Bryant. And Kobe's wife, Vanessa, read a letter that she wrote to Kobe and Gianna. She read this to those in attendance, and here it is.
She was thoughtful like him. They were so easy to love. Everyone naturally gravitated towards them. They were funny, happy, silly, and they loved life. They were so full of joy and adventure. God knew they couldn't be on this earth without each other. He had to bring them home to heaven together. Babe, you take care of our Gigi. And I got Nani, Bibi, and Coco. We're still the best team. We love and miss you, Boo Boo and Gigi. May you both rest in peace and have fun in heaven until we meet again one day. We love you both and miss you forever and always. Mommy.
I was stunned to see Vanessa stand up and give the eulogy that she did. I just don't know that I would have the composure to do it and do it so eloquently as she did.
She had such fortitude, and it was from the heart as a mother and as a wife. I can't even imagine how she got through that, but it really does show what a strong person she is and that she'll be able to carry. She's got three more daughters to care for. I mean,
the parenting doesn't stop because she's now grieving.
Right. And I loved her honesty about all the things that she will miss losing Gigi so early,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a 20-year marriage with Kobe. And it's hard to move on, but she was really, really impressive. And I think the girl power that she showed up there was motivating for everybody.
So after the Lakers' big win against the Celtics on Sunday, LeBron James talked about what Kobe's passing has meant now 1 month later.
It's been a celebration ever since we got the horrific news about his life and what he means to the game, but I don't want to keep going back on it. I think it's unfair and it's unjust to his family.
Mm-hmm.
As they're trying to move on, we're all trying to move on, but also know that, you know, he's with us. His jersey's sitting in my locker right now, but it just puts me in a difficult mind state when I continue to harp on it. I'm trying to, if you can respect that.
Sure.
What do you think about that?
I think there's a point where it's hard to be asked a question over and over and over again. Think how many times he's asked about Kobe Bryant. And I think he just doesn't want to address it anymore. It's hard to come up with something new to say that he hasn't already said. I mean, clearly he's a personal fan, has a good relationship with Kobe, and is grieving the loss. But there's a point at which it's hard to still answer the question. And the question from the media always comes, well, how are you dealing with it? Or what is your emotion now? Or what did Kobe Bryant mean to the game? And I think it's fatiguing to try to come up with something different, something meaningful each time, and something thoughtful and representative of who Kobe was.
Well, and here's LeBron, the face of the franchise that Kobe was for so many years. And grieving is not a light switch. You don't turn it on and off. It's a process, and it takes time. Let him do it without being asked about it.
Zion Williamson, who has just lit up the league as a rookie, now that he's healthy, had a nice game against the Warriors. And
he doesn't have a nice game against the Warriors.
Well, I know. This is that year, isn't it?
Yes.
But as the season progresses, he's explained just how much more comfortable he's getting in the NBA.
I do feel like I'm getting more comfortable. I feel like I get more comfortable with the games go on. You know, I'm still a rookie. There's a lot to learn with fouls. You know, how to keep your head mentally into the game even when you're down 15, 13. And, I mean, just have fun, to be honest. If I'm not having fun, then something's wrong.
Well, he is having fun, and he's producing at a high level.
Averaging 20 points a night.
I really didn't envision that he would hit the ground running this quickly. I mean, it's hard for any rookie player to adjust to the speed of the NBA, the strength of the NBA players, but he has stepped in and played at the highest level. If he were to play like this over the course of a year, he'd be an all-star already.
Right, and he missed over half of the season.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I credit the Pelicans. That was the right thing to do. Do not rush this kid back. He's got a long career ahead of him.
Yeah, this is not the year the Pelicans are going to be contenders, but they can really build on what he's doing there. And they've got some pieces.
They can make some good inroads.
And they've got some draft picks to come. This is a team that, when you think about a year to five-year horizon, you can be pretty bullish on the Pelicans now.
Agreed.
And that's something we really have never been able to say about the Pelicans.
No, who would think what's going on in Smoothie King Arena is going to be shaking the NBA? But I love think it's going
to
happen.
Love that. All right, let's shift gears to the NFL. The Indianapolis Colts had a press conference yesterday, and of course, their owner, Jim Irsay, was asked about the future of Andrew Luck.
I know you guys, you know, want to ask me about Andrew. Look, I mean, Andrew's my friend, and I miss my friend. You know, I love winning games with him. I love seeing his happiness in the locker room. But right now, you know, I know Coach has had dinner with him. Chris has had dinner with him. But I really, you know, I mean, I can't comment on anything in terms of, you know, will he ever come back? Is he coming back this year? Is he coming back next year? I don't know.
See, to me, that held out some real hope when he was talking about, well, he's taking time off. And so, but right now, meaning right now, I can't say that he's coming back. But it did imply that there's a dialogue happening there that Andrew Luck is actively considering returning to the Colts.
Well, that's how Jim Irsay left it. So we'll see.
I'll just tell you, I mean, when you think about, there's a lot of hype this offseason about all the quarterbacks who are now free agents, and all the quarterbacks who might move or join a team and have a big impact. And you can say Tom Brady, and Tom Brady is the GOAT, of course. You can mention other great names. I mean, Drew Brees is going back to the Saints, so that one's done. But throw in a Philip Rivers, a Tom Brady.
Oh, Philip Rivers.
If Dak Prescott were ever to hit the market, it doesn't matter.
Oh my gosh,
the coach, the guy who would make the biggest impact joining an NFL team this offseason would be Andrew Luck. Imagine him returning to that team now. That would be a game changer. I mean, the Colts have been listed as one of the potential destinations for Tom Brady or Philip Rivers or even Cam Newton because there are real questions about their quarterback, but there would be no question about their quarterback if Andrew Luck were to return.
Right. Jacoby Brissett was thrown into that role and at the, you know, late August retirement, sudden retirement of Andrew Luck.
Yep. I mean, it would be fascinating to watch him come back and what that would mean for that team. In the division that they have, the Texans have the best quarterback by far
in the AFC South.
But you throw Andrew Luck back in there, and then that would turn that division upside down.
Be interesting as Lucas Oil Stadium turns. Da, da, da.
A big topic of discussion has been the players taking matters into their own hands and retaliating against the Astros players. So there are whispers, as we all have heard, that there'll be some kind of punishment for the Astros players. Pitchers will throw at them, hit them. But the new manager of the Angels, Joe Maddon, has made it clear he does not want his pitchers throwing at the Astros batters.
You have to be able to have tough conversations to do this job. You can't run away from that. Now, I'm going to probably get disagreed with, and I'm going to listen to the whole thing, and then hopefully we're going to come to a conclusion that I think satisfies us and baseball in general and become part of the healing process, hopefully. I am eager to help promote the healing process and have our game regain the threshold, the mantle that it's supposed to be on.
Class personified. I love me some Joe Maddon. I loved what he did in Chicago. The Angels are lucky to grab him. I think he's great. And, you know, Rob Manfred has said, any plunking of the Astros hitters this season will not be tolerated. I mean, the players and their wives and their kids are getting threats of murder, rape. We had some troll on Twitter. Josh Reddick posted a picture of his he has 5-month-old twins, twin boys, that they rolled over. And a Twitter troll said, I hope they get cancer.
Amazing.
You know, these are baseball players.
Yep.
They're not murderers, last I checked. They're baseball players. I mean, there's got to be some perspective. I appreciate what Joe Maddon's doing. You know, cheating is rampant in Major League Baseball. I hate that it is. But the buck's going to stop with the Astros, so everybody better take their deep breath and consider themselves lucky and clean it up. That's what I'm saying.
All right, Astros needing to come back out of this morass, and they're going to have to do it without Gerrit Cole, who has joined the Yankees. And Gerrit Cole had this to say about wearing pinstripes.
I was really excited. It was for just a couple pictures for Rawlings, but I remember the first time I put it on, and I suited up with the belt and everything, and it was just unbelievable, surreal feeling.
People forget how good he was last year. In the regular season, he was outstanding for the Astros, they will sorely miss him. I mean, he was the ace of that rotation for a good chunk of that season.
Oh, no, he was phenomenal. And he got better, I feel like, as the season progressed. I thought he was absolutely great. I think what was hard as a Houston fan is moments after that gut-wrenching Game 7 loss to the Nationals, who nobody's talking about the Nationals being World Series champs because of this other thing. So let's give them some credit because, wow, first World Series championship for that franchise. But Gerrit Cole, I mean, within moments, he had on a Boris hat, his agent's hat, and he said, I'm not part of a team. Don't ask me.
I've never seen a player that quickly basically abandon his team and his teammates. I mean, presumably he's friends with these guys. There were other guys being free agents who were coming. I mean, why did he immediately put on Team Boris hat moments after the loss? That was, to me, a very unique gesture.
I think he was upset with Hinch to not put him in relief. And, you know, he has explained that recently why he didn't, I wasn't upset with him. This is what AJ and I had talked about, but that's not true. You're a competitor and you are probably the best pitcher in baseball, if not one of the, and I think that was a reaction to that. And he was done. I think he felt like if the ball was in my hands, we would have won the game.
Mm.
And I still don't like it, but there you go.
Well, as an Astros fan, I did want Hinch to put him in that game to leave him on the shelf. He's your best pitcher, was not a good move, and obviously the Nationals came away with the title. All right, that's the end of this segment on He Said, She Said. We'll come back and wrap up the show next up on ESPN Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on ESPN Nation Radio.
And on ESPNNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, Carla, I'm going to give you a choice of two men. You can pick them, and then you'll have to explain why.
You're only giving me two men to choose from?
Yes,
come on,
two men. Tyson Fury, the man who can taste blood. You can pick him and the lick on the neck.
Lovely.
Or you can pick Zamboni driver David Ayers, who was the Zamboni driver in the matchup between the Maple Leafs and the Carolina Hurricanes. Tell that story. Which one do you want?
I'm going with Mr. Z.
I'm not surprised.
Zamboni. Oh, my gosh.
What happened?
This was an amazing story. I happened to be watching that game. So he had to suit up. Dave Ayers, he does play in like a minor league, AHL affiliate of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But he was there at the game. He is his official occupation, is what you said, Zamboni
driver.
So
when the night began, his job was to drive the Zamboni.
Exactly.
Love
but
that.
He also gets to be there at the games for free.
Sure.
As a reserve goalie. The funny thing was, he was the reserve goalie, not for Toronto, but for Carolina. Their first string, their starting goalie, injured. The second string goes in, injured. Goalie in the house happens to be Dave. So he's got to put on the opponent's kit, sit there in the goal. First two shots went right by him. And do you know what? He stopped the next 8 out of 10 and helped Carolina beat Toronto.
Fantastic.
6-3. But I've got something even better.
Okay.
I hope you're sitting down.
Yes.
You are, 'cause I'm looking at you. But he had a kidney transplant 2 years ago.
Wow.
Like, how about this guy? This is Rudy on Ice. And how cool that it was on the weekend of the Miracle on Ice. 40-year, you know, anniversary of the Miracle on Ice. USA over Russia. So, wow, the hockey gods, they were happy. They were happy.
Great, great showing. Now, I know you weren't born when the Miracle on Ice happened 40 years ago.
That's correct.
But it is fun. There have been lots of discussion about what were the other greatest upsets in the history of sports. And one that's bounced out of me, I just saw it, I couldn't believe it, was the NC State over University of Houston Collegiate Basketball Championship.
Oh, the Guy Lewis, Clyde Drexler, Hakeem Olajuwon team.
Yeah, that was a fearsome team. And yet, NC State, in that last second there with the missed shot, rebound, basket, and NC State walked off a winner. That was listed as one of the top 10 biggest upsets in the history of all of sports. The Miracle on Ice, of course, was one of the others. It was fun to look down that list. Oh, Muhammad Ali defeating Sonny Liston and later George Foreman. Those two were listed. It's all fun to look back at those things. But you mentioned the Miracle on Ice. That's a big one.
It was a hockey weekend.
Big hockey weekend. And your man, the Zamboni driver, getting a little love tonight here on the Boston The Gloss.
Isn't that great?
Jose, you're going to get a love tonight, aren't you?
Look at the outfit he's wearing. Of course he's getting love.
He's going to get a lot of love tonight. Jose, thanks for your help tonight. You've been listening to the Boston The Gloss on SB Nation Radio.